Welcome to the Kairos and Van City podcast, a slow content indie Vancouver-based podcast for grassroots gatherings and passion projects from a Catholic creative minority. In the words of Jesus Christ, "For what shall it profit a man to gain the whole world and lose his soul?" Many thanks to the Catholic Creatives podcast for inspiring this local initiative. You are listening to Kairos and Van City episode 3. Today's guest is Catholic Creative co-founder Anthony D'Ambrosio from Sherwood Fellows Creative Agency.
It's about something looking at you and saying, "I understand, I see you." I own a creative agency called Sherwood Fellows, and we work with organizations that want to build communities. And we also have a community that we're building called Catholic Creatives, which is a community of entrepreneurs, artists, innovators, risk takers who want to see a new renaissance take place in the church through beauty, innovation, and a culture of creativity. And we are right now at this point of really starting to kind of scale it out by creating regional events in 10 different cities across the U.S. and partnering with our Sunday Visitor to put on a talent search. It's sort of Shark Tanky, to find the best Catholic innovative ideas that are sort of stimulated out there right now to big problems that the church is facing. And OSV is actually putting aside like $300,000 to award to those ideas this year. So right now we're like just trying to create community and stimulate a space within which, an ecosystem within which awesome ideas not only can be like thought of, but can be executed. All the partnerships and collaborations and talent and funding that is necessary is all there and present in like one ecosystem, in a garden, perhaps you might say. So yeah, Catholic Creatives is seeking to be an ecosystem that stimulates creativity and a new renaissance in the church. Yeah, that's it. I live in Dallas.
You have a huge heart and desire for community and connection. You are very open, welcoming, and you have like a huge sense of hospitality. I see that you have a desire to see people and to be seen by them. And when I've like listened to your CC podcast interviews, you also have, and when you've briefly talked about different things, you have like you desire like the community, like the eschatological vision, but also like to see that here, like on Earth. That's really cool. And you have an openness to conversations and like an ease of that, like with other people. So that's really cool. I see that as gifts. And I also recently listened to a talk you gave in San Diego. I thought that was really nice. Yeah. Someone posted it and wanted to talk about that. I like that you said, like, you encouraged people to make a moment of poetry for one another and, like, just, like, create and like, get together. When you're in relationships, you, like, respond after a fight with, like, art. I don't know. I liked that. And also, like an exercise you made people go through, like, 5 years, draw what that would look like and, like, draw what's like holding you back. Sometimes I don't know what the barriers are, or even if I do, there's only so much I can like physically do for myself for that, but it's like, how do I like bring that to the cross? Like there's like also that. I'm like, oh, I've been thinking about that. Like I haven't like drawn it out like as you had suggested to them, but that is a cool idea. I'm like, ah, just challenge myself to do that too.
Yeah, totally. I mean, one of the reasons why I loved that is because I think that it's, for those who haven't heard the talk, one of the things that I talked about was how language has been really broken down since the Tower of Babel. I mean, within the Judeo-Christian sort of mythos, there's paradise in the garden, and then sin comes in and it starts to create shame. People begin to hide, and then there's as civilization grows, there's this climactic moment where Babel, which is this tower towards heaven that's being built, falls down because people are unable to understand each other. And I think the story is just so profound because it speaks to the way in which we have such a difficult time really understanding what the other person is trying to say. Because words, in a way, are like these, they are so detached from our experiences. They're like four or five levels of abstraction away from whatever the experience is that they're referencing. So point being, when we communicate with poetry or with dance or with a drawing, it doesn't matter if those were not good at communicating in those ways. Just the mode of communication is better than explanation. So when I'm in a fight with my girlfriend or a family member or whatever, moving into a moment of creation that can actually express my like internal world to them rather than trying to explain it or criticize them or like say why they were wrong, like helps to create empathy and a deeper level of communication. So I just am always trying to get people to become more concrete with what they're saying, and ultimately like getting them to draw a picture of it, literally like a stick figure picture. It's crazy. And it's amazing how profound they can be. Like when I first did that exercise, it was like within a small group, we were just kind of making it up as we went. And the drawing became this really trippy, like self-revelation that I didn't quite mean to make, you know, like, cause it just, there's so much more in it. You can do a whole lot more with a picture than you can with like, with a word, and it's harder to hide what you're saying when you draw something like that. So anyway.
I've seen that like in disagreements or like fights within like a relationship or whatever, where it's like sometimes like when you're trying to communicate, I found like through words, they definitely fell short versus explaining, as you say, like your internal world by like being present or like maybe just physically just, or maybe like expressing it verbally versus like any other way, texting or like emailing or anything like that, like how that can be misconstrued. But like also like, yeah, just sharing one's own internal experience. I can, it's an invitation versus a criticism where people can feel defensive and angry, I guess. I'm just, as I'm talking now, I'm like, oh, like processing things. Definitely more beautiful that way. You're inviting them to something.
Beauty, at least in my definition of it, isn't necessarily like something that is pretty. It's a concrete incarnation of a truth. It's like beauty in a way is a vessel for truth that is more profound than could possibly be spoken directly. I think the most beautiful truths are truths that are like that you have more meaning than can be fit into one sentence, you know? And so in order to do that, like when we can no longer express something with an explanation, we have to kind of take off our shoes and enter into like a mystery. And therefore we have to, that's when art making begins. And I just want everybody to begin to like, I don't know, return to communication that is more beautiful, and therefore more incarnate and less abstract. I think abstraction is like where fear and miscommunication and relational breakdown tend to live. So yeah, it's something that is very hard to practice because when you're angry, the last thing that you want to do is create. When you're afraid, the last thing you want to do is create. It's like, you want to criticize, you want to like run away, you want to hide, you want to put your like, being empathetic and creative in that mode is like very difficult. That's also like the most important time to do it.
thanks for sharing. I feel like it's really good food for thought. And even like what you just said, it's really good to think about when we're sitting in our day-to-day trying to be creative, like we're experiencing like a writer's block or something, or even like when we're trying to develop a habit of daily creating, whether it's like writing or some kind of art or something like that, like to push against, or like to understand that we might be feeling a certain thing, like an anger, and then yet taking that emotion, but also engaging with it in some way, which is like, which produces something like perhaps like beautiful, maybe not necessarily like beautiful in the pretty sense, but like something that's like, yeah, as you say, like a sound of beauty.
Yeah, I think beautiful things can be very ugly. Like some of the truths that people speak in the best art in the world, you think like Dostoevsky's work, or really anything that's Russian. Like there's a lot of really dark, there's a lot of darkness in it. There's a lot that's really ugly, but the expression of it in the mode of art, in a way, makes it beautiful. It's it takes an experience and helps someone else to step into it, you know, and therefore it's an intimacy. Even the sharing of a dark thing becomes therefore meaningful and intimate. It's not like that when like communication that is not artistic tends to other and alienate, because there's no place in it for shared experience. It's like two people trying to convince the other of like of something, you know, to get them across a line. I find this is so like in all of my relationships, my clients, you know, in business or like whatever, it's just part of our culture, but like we're just so used to speaking language that is abstract and that is polarizing, that is like, okay, so I think you did this wrong and I'm experiencing discomfort around that, and so I need you to change your behavior so that I don't experience that discomfort anymore, rather than, so like the instinct there is to like try and criticize or change the other person's behavior, convince them that they're wrong, rather than to like dig deep into like, why am I experiencing discomfort right now? And like, what's the story there? And can I actually give them an experience of that discomfort with me so they can see what I'm like, so we can have intimacy in that? And that requires vulnerability. It can be really scary, but it's also like much more fruitful. And I want to practice that as like a way of life, you know, but, I also really want to create a movement within the world where people are like speaking in a different mode, like the mode of symbol and of beauty and of art, so that they can restore intimacy with each other. So, and with me, you know, I think that's where it like comes down to the best. Like, I want intimacy so much, and I know that I would have so much more access to intimacy if everybody else would do this too.
The word intimacy is so, like, to me, it's like such a special thing too. Like, I mean, there's many layers of intimacy, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I would think, I don't know. And it's also related to like kinds of relationships that we have. So obviously like intimacy between like husband and wife, it's like a little bit of a different level than like between brothers or whatever, right? Like it's a little bit of that. Like we can still in so many ways see one another like deeply and vulnerably, obviously. Like not that one is, yeah, I don't know, but it's just like a little, just because each, I like to think that each person and relationship is different because there's two different individuals like meeting with each other. I don't know. And so like that level of connection is just going to be a little bit special and different with each person.
Mm-hmm. So,
seconds earlier, when we're looking at somebody with empathy and like just trying to see where they're coming from, like definitely it's also a practice in like developing virtue, like laying aside our own pride to be like, okay, maybe I'm wrong. Impossible. No. Like, maybe the way I'm seeing things might not be correctly, like, accurate to the truth or whatever. But, like, we're, like, it's a loving thing to, like, step aside and wonder, oh, what is the person before me experiencing? And it's a kind thing. So it's, like, definitely, like, the way you're explaining about beauty and, like, also seeking that and expressing that, I feel like that definitely would encourage others as well to then also, like, then pursue, like, virtue in that way, or practice virtue. Like, if that makes sense.
Yeah. There's so Liz Soroki gave a hilariously named talk at the summit that was, like, how to, so I can't remember exactly what it was, something like how to advance your career, get a better relationship with God, and save your marriage by making excuses. And I thought that it was going to be, like, that was sarcastic, that there was a certain amount of, like, she was just going to, like, call us all to, like, not making excuses for ourselves, and obviously, like, you know, suck it up and pull yourself up by your bootstraps. But actually, what she was saying was that, like, what she was recommending people do is make excuses for other people, and that their lives would be much better if they assumed the best intent with other people more often, or told themselves better stories about other people's intentions. And one of the things that she said was that charity begins not necessarily with service, but in the mind, assuming the best and empathizing with other people, and or assuming the best intention, or charitably creating a narrative for other people. And I think it's very true, because for me, when I'm afraid, when I'm upset, when a family member, like, says something to me that makes me feel like something I value isn't important. Being home for Easter, this is, like, a huge Catholic family. I'm here in Dallas, and all of this, all of my siblings are around, and their significant others and their kids, and it's amazing and super full, but, like, also very hard, because all of my childhood stuff is, like, right here in all of my relationships for a weekend. And for some reason, I just find myself to be, like, way more sensitive than normal during family holidays. And I have this experience where, like, I wanted to play praise and worship with my brother and sister and my family. It's something we do a lot, and something very, like, intimate to me. And we don't get to do it very much anymore because there's kids and whatever. You can't play during nap time, and when they're awake, kids don't want to do praise and worship. So it's a difficult thing. So anyway, we're missing my little cousin or little nephew's Easter egg hunt, and my brother-in-law was like, guys, you know, like, came in, we're playing, and he's like, guys, like, your sister's gonna be really upset if you don't come out, you know, and participate in the Easter egg hunt. And as strange as it may sound, like, I became so upset. Like, the whole day I was just fuming, you know? And the narrative in my head was, like, definitely around, like, okay, you don't care about this thing that is so deep and valuable to me, that's who I am, and you don't give a shit about it. So, like, one, obviously you're not that holy. and then two, like, this is because you just, like, think that I'm a sensitive artist and don't care, you know. And you can just hear in that talk, it's like, man, one, this is all lies, and all insecurities and all, like, wounds. But I'm taking my fears and my insecurities and just projecting them on him and, like, creating a narrative about him and his intent and his actions that's just, like, super damning, you know. And it's, I think for me, like, the charity of giving someone the benefit of the doubt can be a very difficult thing to do when I am like feeling triggered or anxious, or like something core in me is ringing an alarm bell, you know? And in a way, it's a way of hiding. Like if I can demonize somebody like that, then I don't have to, I can protect myself from them and be righteously angry and therefore not have a relationship and not expose myself, you know? And so trying to like, I didn't write him a poem. That would be really like, too much for me. But point is, you can see I'm still like really trying to learn this myself, like becoming intimate and making art to like communicate across a boundary like that is, that's next level stuff, but creates charity for the other person.
Ah, so real for like relationships, what you just said. I don't understand you at all. But I feel like what you're saying though about like people triggering us and like us finding it hard to give them the benefit of the doubt, and that's harder when the relationships are closer to us, or you feel like, yeah, like there's a deeper, maybe even like stronger expectation there of like some kind of like relationship or intimacy or whatever. Like I feel like, okay, if someone offends me that I'm not close to, or I'm a coworker or something, does it matter as much to me? No. Like, you know, it's like maybe they were having a bad day. That's fine. Like, that doesn't bother me. But if it's like some person that's like very significant, or like a friend, and it happens to be something that I think that they think they should know that it's like triggering to me, or it's like really important to me, then I feel like it's a bigger deal, right? Like, well, that's what I found anyway.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard because like to go here, I want to share concrete experiences, but like some of that it's like so it requires like sharing things about other people that they're not here to share it for themselves. So I'm not going to tell any more stories about it, but I will say that the way that I have been learning for myself and growing as a like creative, has been, a lot of that has been generated out of really strong conflict within like romantic relationship and my work, running an agency and like having conflict with people. Like I just have to be in conflict resolution a lot. And, it's funny, but I think before, when I wrote based on, I've got a really intense, you know, inspiration, or like I'm seeing an insight in relationship with God, and it's really beautiful, but it's like a me and God thing, or I'm like an omniscient third person looking out over the like somebody else's story. But my art has morphed a lot to like this very, very first person, like, confessional, perspective that is like working. You can just see in, if you like read the last whatever poems, they're all like, they're all efforts at trying to write specifically to like one person, or for like a small group of people that I'm trying to communicate to, like, I'm writing for my girlfriend, or I'm writing for my family, or I'm writing for like the coworkers in my agency, or I'm writing for my like Catholic creatives, which for me is like still a pretty intimate group of people that I know. Anyway, point being that that shift has become really you actually noticed this. You were like, I don't see the same sort of like shine in your poems anymore. And it's because I'm changing my swing in a way, like Tiger Woods changing his swing in golf. Like, it's a really hard thing to do, to, after learning in art one way, to change the way that you do it. But I'm in the middle of a swing change, and it's much harder. Like, I'm digging out something that feels much more vulnerable and more intimate, and like more difficult to say because I'm so close to it. But Yeah, I think it's a beautiful thing to, like, it's created so much fruit for me personally in all of my relationships, making that perspective shift for my art.
What I'm getting out of it and the hearing is just like how important it is to share our love by laying down our pride, and it's also like looking at that person and just trying to understand them. I feel like people are a mystery, but like not in a bad way. Like it's just, there's so much more that we can't understand initially that takes a while. It takes like maybe even years or lifetime, that maybe if we could just be kinder to each other and like try to understand each other through, for example, as you say, like creating art.
This poem is one that I wrote for all of those groups, actually. I wrote it as I was processing stuff with my girlfriend, and wrote it for my team to express like what I was trying to, like what I was going through to them. And then ultimately I read it at the State of Communion. But it's actually about the process that I feel like I'm going through as an artist in becoming more vulnerable to the world and learning how to do that. Like it just, I feel like there's so much work of like taking off layers and layers and years of clothes that I've been hiding behind, or masks that I've been hiding behind, or whatever. So anyway, this is called On Hiding. Today I asked myself, what does it mean to be created to be like God in a chain that stretches back past parents and parents' parents to a naked man, desperately covering himself in leaves, hiding in a bush? Was he feeling paradise slipping from his once innocent hands, even as he tried to coax himself out? Why am I doing this? Why can't I be naked with you anymore? But now, after such a bite-sized sin, the glory shifted away from him, like a cloud upon a slight breeze. How strange must that first hiding have felt? I know it well, though. I started young. I hid in my bathroom, in books, when my mother passed by, drowning in debt, looking for help. I hid my report card. I hid a pile of dust under the rug in the garage from my dad. I hid the name of Joy, my first grade crush, in a box on my dresser. I hid from puberty as long as I could, until my babysitter, who had a seatbelt belt with bottle caps on it and spaghetti-strapped breasts, I flushed into a rose blush and hid from her in my room, but I couldn't hide from the feeling inside of me. In seventh grade, I didn't know how to hide my tube socks and my tucked-in shirt, and my drawings of Goku helping the Jedi fight the Black Riders on Hoth. So when Charlie D punched me in the face when I tried to sit with them during lunch, I hid the bruise. Or I hid in my bed after 3 weekends in a row of no friends. I hid my tears, though no one came looking for them. I hid them in magazines, and I hid those under my pillow. So then I packed my box of boyhood treasures, an old 2-cent penny from the Civil War, and a story I was writing about a hero, and a feather headdress. I buried them in the sand in the creek. I hid my God self from my friend self and my friends from God, drawing anarchy signs on underpasses and crosses and confirmation classes. I hid from school with my skateboard. I hid from the cops on Fifth behind the dumpster. I hid during most confessions on the dark kneeler, afraid to say that. I hid my broken window, broken from when I snuck out to hide my pain for myself, to make out with girls that I hid from each other. And if you asked me what I was hiding from, I wouldn't even know who you were talking to. But every fist pump, mosh pit, punk rock anthem, every beer drunk was just a kid trying to dig himself up, to say, this is what I've been trying to say, Dad. I've been trying to come out this whole time, but I just didn't know how. Beauty isn't something you are looking at. It's about something looking at you and saying, I understand. I see you. And in a dark room on a Saturday night, kneeling on carpet squares, that boy found beauty, looking at him through a telescope made of metal and glass and a little piece of naked body, floating on a cloud of voices, making the music that Warped Tour had always wanted to make. All the warped and broken people saying, "Me too." Lazarus, come out. Wake up, little boy. Wake up and walk out of that bed. Walk out of that death. Break out, son, from that bathroom, from that cave. On the other side of that grave is the garden where you can walk naked and unashamed in your living room and find room to live free. And if you ask that boy now, what does it mean to be like God? He'll tell you it means to learn to come out, to seek instead of hide, to put down your leaves of fear and make your tenderest dreams public, letting your heart streak naked through boardrooms and cafeterias and even in your own home. It means to show the world that you don't have to hide in your bathroom as your family passes by.
Thank you so much for sharing that.
Yeah.
Not easy to step out into the world again and again, and like to share of oneself. Because there's a lot of things people keep hidden, a lot of like dark things or lonely things or choices or like things people are afraid that if they're known that they won't be loved, or that that whatever that might be struggling with could never change. Like that's hard. Or that like perhaps there's like toxic people around them that once they've shared a piece of them, that piece has been destroyed in some way. I feel like, but I see that like the things that you, like for example, you're involved in, and things that, that you do and say, also like you're trying to like create a place that that is like safe for that, or that where people can like thrive or find their place in these types of things and like these projects. I see both things. I see that it can be difficult to no longer hide. But I see that you've also like, I mean, there must have been a place where you did feel safe, clearly, in that from that telescope. I think it's an illusion. I hope to adoration, to Christ, his presence there. I'm understanding that correctly in your poem, that there's a place that you've experienced a safety that you now like, that you want to share, like with others, with the world, to invite others into.
Yeah.
Like, yes, it's possible. Like, let's like come and join, kind of a thing.
Yeah, I mean, the safety is like the vulnerability of Jesus. You know, like I want to cry even just thinking about it. It's like, I'm not the first person. I'm not the leader of vulnerability. You know what I mean? Like, Jesus is God becoming a baby in a manger and a poor one that like is completely without any like pomp and circumstance, you know? And so like, I'm not having to like go out on the front lines and like wave this banner of vulnerability. It's like, the first person to become vulnerable is the one that makes it safe for the other person, right? So, like, that's me, what God has done for me. And because I have that safety in my relationship with him, I have the ability to offer it to others, you know?
Right. Such a good reminder. Yeah, definitely would be, like, thinking about that. What you said just, like, made me think about the cross. Like, as you say, Christ incarnate, like, as a baby, like, being completely vulnerable. Christ, like, completely naked on the cross, like they, like I heard that he was like completely naked, that like the sign of his circumcision and like the covenant was like before everyone.
Yeah, that's like, it's one of the things that I'm like, I cannot imagine Brené Brown being the champion of vulnerability and not loving Jesus. Like, there's like one religion in the world where like God is the incarnation of vulnerability, you know, like it's just like crazy that somehow Christianity is now associated with like legalism and war and othering, when like the person of Christ, who the church is built around, is like literally the incarnation of peace, like the incarnation of vulnerability, of let me take the first step of exposing myself. Let me take the lowest place, you know, and I'm not going to come with like power. I'm going to come with like a completely soft, like open hand. And I don't know. I just think that like Christianity being in relationship with Christ is like, it should be for us, we should be the best practiced vulnerable people in the world. And somehow we've lost track of that part of our calling, or that part of like our family value. And it hurts me not just to see, like, I think one of the things that hurts me the most is seeing a church where people feel like they can't be vulnerable, you know, like the church is the place where you feel ashamed. Like that's the solution to the world. The world is a place where there's shame. Like the world is a place where there's condemnation, and the church is the place where there is not that, because like Jesus, you know? So, being a people that is characterized by vulnerability is my dream for the church. And the reason why I care about creatives so much is because I think that those are the first, like those are the people, art makers, you know, are entrepreneurs. They're the first people to risk and show the other rest of the world that it's okay, you know? So.
Awesome. That's so awesome. I don't know what to say. this is a good
transition. Is that like moving you? Is that why you're like not?
Yeah. Like I have nothing to add to that or to say. I'm like, that's cool. Good. Because there's so many layers. You're a creator. You understand. Like, obviously, like, just making something and, like, putting it out there, like, having people see you, but it's like, oh, if they see me and they're not kind-hearted, like, they're just going to, like, destroy me as well. Like, there's also that element of it as well, whether or not, like, the art actually, like, is good or beautiful, right? Like, you might make something extremely beautiful, and yet if they just want to destroy you, they could just say something that's, like, that isn't true, but, like, that could still be very hurtful, right? Like, I'm sure people, like artists, have lots of critics, but only because they're saying it out of something that's like for hurting, and you know, just like, anyway, whatever, out of their own insecurity or something.
Oh like man, that. Yeah, it's so scary. It's so scary. But the act, I think that the act of doing it is so. Like for me, writing that poem, there's something that's pretty scary about sharing it, but the act of doing it is so empowering for me, because it's like if I can say it and express it to someone and let someone else into it, I've already cast out my fear of rejection around it, you know, like the act of creating it in communication and empathy for other people is like an act of moving beyond my own fear. And it's a, like the risk is happening in the process of the sharing. And in a way, it's also being completely dissolved in the act of sharing it. For me, maybe like people could judge me or think it's ridiculous or like say I'm oversharing, but by the time I've already processed it, like I'm at this place of invulnerability, you know, I'm almost like invincible, because I'm no longer insecure about it, you know? So for me, writing it was a way to become empowered to no longer feel the risk. And I think creators who do that, who are willing to continue risking, they find themselves becoming more and more empowered as they share. And invite people into their world.
That's a good point for sure. Like the process versus like the product.
Yeah. If you're going to take one point away from me on the whole thing, this is about the process. Writing this poem wasn't for like the world out there. It was like for me, you know, and for like these like intimate relationships, but I'm writing it because I need to write it, not because like I have an audience, you know? And I think that's the, if I could just like encourage people in one way, it would be like, doesn't matter if you're an artist or not, like the act of creating art is an act of self divulgence that is like so much more powerful and palpable and intimate than like any other kind of communication you could make. So if you can't dance, do it anyway.
You have been listening to Kairos and Van City, episode 3. Keep seeking stillness, truth, and goodness. Keep creating beautiful things. Keep striving for virtue. Keep taking up your hidden crosses. And keep dancing. Peace be with you.